What were some of the most important things you learned, or maybe even what are some stories that you can tell us about Lou Donaldson?
Well, there's many, many stories that I have for Lou. And a lot of them are really funny, and most of them are not particularly blue, you know, they're kind of, but Lou, one thing that I learned from Lou, and I also learned the same thing from Etta Jones, who I played with, singer Etta Jones, who is one of my best friends, and she actually got me started recording for Muse Records and Joe Fields but I learned that people like Lou or Etta Jones of that generation, they thought of people that I considered deities, gods, you know, people like Wes Montgomery or Thelonious Monk or John Coltrane. They thought of them as just like regular people that were their peers. So they would talk about them in a different way. Like, you know, one time I was with Etta and she was we were sitting around having a couple drinks and the subject of Wes Montgomery came up. And not to me, Wes Montgomery is a god, you know, deep jazz guitar deity, the greatest if you had to pick one, right?
Right.
So I said, "Oh, Etta, you knew Wes Montgomery?" And she goes, "Oh yeah, Wes was a nice guy, you know. We used to hang out together. I really liked Wes, you know." And I said, "My God, did you ever play together? If you did, that must have been incredible, you know. Did you ever sing with him?" And she goes, "Oh no, I didn't really like the way he played that much." So, you know, I didn't like that locked hands, you know, like the octaves and the block chords, which is, you know, the thing that guitar players just like go crazy over. I didn't really like that much. You know?
So when you were with Etta, you never played like that?
I didn't play, you know, I can play like that, right. but when I only play like that when I'm sort of screwing around, because I know that if I play like that seriously, I'm going to sound like a half-assed Wes.
Right.
You know, and I'd rather sound like whatever I am of a Randy Johnston than a half-assed something else.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I'll do it if it's like a demonstration for a class or something. You know, I'll do it, or if I'm really tired, you know, or something, I'll do it. But I wouldn't do that, you know, because it's just. It's when you hear the real thing, you know, it's ridiculous. You know, do you want to drive a Shelby Cobra or do you want to drive a Hyundai Accent? You know, I mean, and Lou is sort of the same thing, and I heard a lot. I learned a lot from all of those folks, Lou and Lonnie Smith, about how to present jazz. So it's also show business. It's like entertainment, so that somebody who's coming to hear you play, if they're not a musician and they don't really know, you know, they can't follow the choruses and they don't know, oh, that's a so and so, and listen to that lick or whatever, that they can still have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Lou would have this routine with the jokes, and I was like the straight man. I was like Ed McMahon to his Johnny Carson, you know, and which I really loved. I liked doing that as much as I did the music, you know.
Yeah.
But to really present it sort of so you're not only an artist and a musician, but also an entertainer. And I think that was really valuable, and that's something I try to do because I want people that aren't just music students to like what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they would do that. So there was lots of jokes. I mean, and Lou would say some really funny things. One, we used to play and Lou had this very high voice. People, if you hear me imitate him, believe me, it sounds exactly like him. And he
man, John Coltrane, he couldn't play no saxophone. He just played the same over and over again. And then finally, the last time when he get it right, everybody go, yay. I don't know if they're clapping because they like his solo or because he stopped playing.
You know, so he'd talk like that. So the main thing I learned from Lonnie Smith, the organ player, was this how to use dynamics.
Oh, yeah.
The organ is usually a kind of a loud thing, but he would play from very loud to very, very soft. And one time we were playing at the Village Vanguard, which has great acoustics. It's sort of like a megaphone or something with the band at the narrow end. So you can hear almost anything in there. And when you play there, it's really cool too, because if you're a jazz fan and you listen to Sonny Rollins at the Village Vanguard and Bill Evans and all that, you kind of say, wow, this is the same sound, you know, I'm in it. But anyway, we're playing and Lonnie was doing one of his solos where he'd get the organ really like softer and softer and softer. He's playing softer, 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 softer. So finally, I've dropped out. I'm not playing anymore. And Fukushi has dropped out. He's not even playing the brushes anymore. And Lou is standing there. And Lonnie's got it, so the organ, he's got the setting on the stops, so he's just kind of got this whooshing sound effect, like, and all of a sudden, Lou says real loud, he goes, "That sounds like a toilet flushing." And everybody started laughing, you know, because they could hear it. You could hear it perfectly, but...
Because in the Vanguard, yeah, the sounds are great.
You know, in the Vanguard, in the temple of jazz, you know. So it was great, and it wasn't, you know, it was not really like a lot of times now when you see a jazz concert, it's super serious, mm-hmm. and it's like art, you know, like classical music, and nobody's allowed to say anything or anything like that. And this was sort of light. Lighter than that, and even though I will say also that even though those guys were old, Lou is very old for a lot of the time I was with him, like he's like 92 now or something, and we played up and toured up until he was 88, but even though that was, we had lots and lots of young fans, and fans that were not jazz, you know, music students or something, so we didn't. And we'd have lots and lots of young people coming to our gigs, much more than even younger jazz bands would have.
Wow.
So that was cool.
Yeah. Would you like to play something else?
Well, I'd like to play something else.
Do you want to?
This is a song I sang with the Allman Brothers recently. Last Sunday morning, the sunshine fell like rain. The week before, they all seemed the same. With the help of God and the true friends, come to realize, still had two strong legs, even wings to fly. So I ain't wasting time no more. Time goes by like a hurricane, running after subway train. Sally, why are you crying? Been around here three long days, looking like you're dying. Just step yourself outside, look up at the stars above. Go on downtown, baby, got to find somebody to love. Meanwhile, I ain't wasting time no more. Time goes by like a hurricane, running after the subway train. Don't forget the pouring rain. You don't need no gypsy to tell you why. Don't let one precious day slip by. You got to look inside yourself. And if you don't say what you want, maybe sometimes then you don't. Leave your mind alone and just get high. Just get high. Just get high. Just
high. Try and try again. Meanwhile, I ain't wasting time no more. Time goes by like a hurricane, running after subway train. Don't forget the pouring rain, and the subway train and the pouring rain. Subway train. Don't forget the pouring rain.
So you just played that with the Allman Brothers recently, you said.
I played that with J-Mo's band, okay. Which is he always wanted to be a jazz drummer.
Yeah.
So we played some Allman Brothers songs, and we played like Footprints and All Blues and stuff like that. So there's a bunch of my friends from Connecticut who. The saxophone player Chris Jensen, who studied with Jackie McLean up there, plays with him, and David Stoltz on the bass, and Brian Charette is the organ player. Oh, yeah.
Well, you mentioned Dr. Lonnie Smith, and you played with so many of the great organ players, and that's a real specific thing, you know, a genre, this organ guitar. Band sound.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you played with Jack McDuff.
I did,
yeah. Jimmy McGriff.
Yeah.
Shirley Scott, Joey DeFrancesco. Mm-hmm. Probably a lot of other ones.
Rhoda Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Gene Ludwig.
Oh, wow.
Bobby Forrester. Geez, you know, I played a couple times with Larry Golding, Sam Yahel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, a lot of great organ players.
And how did you get started in that? Because, I mean, again, you've kind of been known for that style. How did you get into that? I mean, because once you're in it, it sounds like you were hooked and you became one of the main guys on guitar.
Yeah, after I had been in New York a few years, I had... really not made much headway at all, except for playing with Warren Marsh and a couple of other people. But I played with McDuff a little bit then at first, but McDuff fired me that time because I was not a good reader, even though I was in music school. I have good ears, and I would, you know, I could fake my way through stuff pretty easily. But, you know, I didn't start out learning to read, so I'm, you know, adequate. But anyway, after all that, I got this gig playing at this club in Harlem called the Baby Grand, which was the last of the old-time Harlem jazz clubs. With they had white tablecloths, they had banquettes that they'd pull out, and all the people that had been working there since like the 30s were still working there, the staff, and that, you know, you always had to have a suit and tie on, and when I'd leave at night, everybody in the place would go good night, Brother Randy Johnston. See you tomorrow. You know, it was this incredibly lovely scene. And I was playing there with this woman named Della Griffin, who sang and played the drums. And it was an organ band. And my buddy, who's the saxophone, Texas saxophone player named Matt Goldsberry, got me the gig. And he played with McDuff, too. So then Etta Jones came in there, and she was friends with Della. And also, there was another singer that played there, Irene Reed, who I ended up playing in her band for 7 years. And I learned a whole lot of stuff from her. Actually, some of the songs that I sing, like a couple of things I learned completely. I just try to do it like a really half-assed version of the way she did it. But then Houston, I met Houston Person through Etta Jones, and he started using me on a lot of sessions for Joe Fields for Muse Records with Etta and with his Vibes player Johnny Lytle and with McDuff. And then actually Lou Donaldson heard me on the radio playing with Houston on Houston's record, which was, I think, one of Joey DeFrancesco's first sessions. Joey was like 17 then, or 16. He was already incredible. He was already the best organ player I'd ever heard in my life then. Yeah. So I just sort of got into it from then on. And they liked me because, I don't know exactly why, but I think because, you know, I was coming from the bluesy background, and I did like people like Kenny Burrell, and also I was coming from, you know, listening to B.B. King and stuff like that, and Houston liked me because I was a Southerner. You know, he considered me a Southerner because I was from Virginia. I'm from here and Virginia, but, you know, he considered me a Southerner, and he and Etta also turned me on to listening to country western music. Both of them said that, you know, I asked Etta, what kind of music do you like? And she go, oh, I love Billie Holiday, and I love Sarah Vaughan, and I also really like country music. You know, she loved like Loretta Lynn and stuff like that.
Wow.
And you can hear it, you know, because she kind of yodels, you know.
Yeah, now that you mention it.
And Houston would say, yeah, man, that's, you got to listen to that. So that's your sound. That's like the white man's blues, you know. Yeah. So, and I, you know, before I was, I kind of would, I would hear, when I was in Virginia, I'd hear Johnny Cash on the radio, and I'd kind of say like, I like that, but I better not say anything. You know, you're not supposed to like that. You're only supposed to like Coltrane, you know.
Yeah.
But they, so I think that they like that kind of sound, you know, that bluesy kind of, a little bit of twangy, a couple of bent notes here and there. And, you know, so I think that helped, but I just got into, and you know, every organ band really needs a guitar, because the organ, actually the way it works traditionally is that they, the organ player really walks the bass with the left hand and then doubles some of the notes with the foot. The organ player doesn't really play all the notes with the foot, because if you did it, it's too muddy. It wouldn't sound right. It's okay for like a hymn in a church or something, but it's for a fast, like doom 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 doom. It's kind of this folk art where they play the left hand and then they kind of double some of the notes, which gives it that thumping great sound. But it's not like a piano where you're comping with your left hand and then soloing with your right hand. So consequently, they need a guitar to comp. And the guitar, the electric guitar and the organ, they're both electric instruments, so they kind of go together well. You know, unlike, as you music students know from your ensembles, you know, it's like the the guitar and the piano comping together. Yeah. It can kind of be like nails on the blackboard. You know, you don't have to worry. The organ is just this big mushy pad of just mush, you know, so you can comp with that. It's fine, you know. So it was just natural, and I could get work doing that, you know, where some of the other stuff I couldn't get as much work,
Well, what else do you have for us today?
I am going to play one traditional jazz chord solo just to prove I can do it. You know. Here we go. Thank you.
That's beautiful.
That's it. Safe.
You did it. Oh, that's gorgeous.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, well, I'm so glad we were able to work this out and catch you as you were coming through the area.
Yeah, me too.
You have a new album out called Cherry Juice, and you have, I think, 14 albums out in total. Is that right?
Yeah, I think this makes it 14.
Okay.
Yeah, and...
And you just moved back to Virginia a few years ago, and I was reading a little bit about, you know, your recent activities, and I think someone said this album and this group that you've been playing with is sort of a reinvention in some ways, kind of going back to your roots a little bit in Virginia.
It is, and at first my albums were made for labels, for small labels, pretty much all of them. I mean, and they sort of, they were good labels like the Muse and High Note and some other ones like that. But they sort of had me sort of in trying to get me into a certain market, you know, and which was a good market and a good niche to be in. But now I'm sort of just producing the albums myself, the last two I have, and it's just kind of part of my thing. I have a YouTube channel with lots of stuff on there, which anybody can join for free. And
great.
And I have a Patreon, which I have different things on, which is another kind of website where I do videos and audio tracks that I put up on that, and you can join you can give like $10 a month, $1 a month, or something like that. And for $10 a month, you get this thing called the Lick of the Month, which is like a lesson.
Wow!
And I don't have that many patrons yet, so anybody that joins it. If like somebody recently said they wanted to learn how to solo better on St. Thomas, and I did a little lesson on that. So that's, I have that, and so my albums are kind of just like part of the thing now, and I have them, and I try to get them to radio stations as I can, and I also sell them on the gigs and sell them through CD Baby. So this album is in this album. My old albums are. The first ones I didn't really sing on, even though I had sung, you know, way back, but they're more instrumental jazz, and that was good. This one I sang on about half the songs and played about half, and I think I sang six and played four, and it's Virginia musicians. There's a great young organ player in my town called Jonah Kane West, who's really one of the best. He's not ambitious. He doesn't, he just kind of lays back. He doesn't like to travel and stuff. And then the guy that recorded the album and played some, there's about three saxophone tracks on there. He played on that. His name is Bobby Reed. He has a great studio, and he was played with Bruce Hornsby for years. Bruce Hornsby who is a jazz musician, but he's a pop star, you know, known as a pop star. He's from Virginia. And then a drummer from Richmond named Kelly Strawbridge, who's, you know, one of the good guys down there. So it's I'm very proud of this album. I think it sounds as good as any of the other ones, and it's sort of more what I'm doing now, you know. I hope everybody will pick one up. You can find it on CD Baby. It's on iTunes. It's on Spotify. And also, if you go on my website and write me a letter, I probably could send you one too. So,
right. And their website is
randyjohnston.net. And I need Johnston, JOHNSTON.net, NET. Yes.
That's great. Well, it's been awesome to have you here. Thanks for sharing your music and all these wonderful stories. Why don't you play us out with one more tune?
One more tune, okay. Here's a tune that I learned from Irene Reed, the singer I was telling you about.
You told me, baby, that you didn't want me around. Said that you were tired of me and you didn't need a clown. Said you had a brand new man all set to take my place. Even brought him in the club just to flaunt him in my face. Now you're trying to tell me that you made a big mistake, and you're hoping and you're praying that it's not too late for me to take you back. I'll take you back. I'll take you back. I'll take you back. When rats have knees and money grows on trees, I'll take you back. I'll take you back. To do was say, and you know I'd come up with it some old kind of way. As that saying goes, kind ain't no way to be, 'cause you took my kindness for weakness and you walked all over me. Now you're trying to tell me what a fool you've been, and it would be so much better if I would take you back again. I'll take you back. I'll take you back. I'm gonna take you back. I'll take you back. When elephants can fly and winos don't get high, I'll take you back. I'll take you back. Now peace be with you, baby. Good luck and happiness. I don't wish you no bad luck. I wish you all the best. But listen to me, baby. Hear me when I say, don't sit around waiting, waiting for the day for me to take you back. I'll take you back. I'm gonna take you back. I'll take you back. When snow is hot and fire is not, I'll take you back. I'll take you back. When James Brown ain't funky and King Kong's not a great big monkey, I'll take you back. If you can wait that long, then you can come on home. If you can wait that long, you're gonna come on home. I'll take you back.
Who wrote that tune?
A guy named Esdrin Woodruff is the name of the guy who wrote that song.
Is he a singer? Did he sing it? Or?
I think so. I don't even know what he was, but Irene did it, and this blues band called Little Charlie and the Nightcats did it. When I was trying to relearn it, which was not that long ago, I couldn't really find almost any versions of it, you know. And so I had to sort of piece it together.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's on the new CD, so.
Aha. So. Perfect. Well, thanks again for being with us, man.
Thank you, Keith. Yeah. It was a pleasure.